I would like to welcome everyone to the second in the series of Shi'ulim lectures on the Rambam's negative theology. Once again, we are covering one of the central issues in Jewish theology, or for that matter, in all of theology, known as the negative theology of Maimonides, which is located, from a literary point of view, in the chapters 50 through chapter 69 in the first section of the Rambam's Guide for the Perplexed. Last lecture, which was the inaugurating lecture, we went through Perek Nun, which is chapter 50, and today, in Mitzvah Hashem, we will, Be'ezras Hashem Yisborach, we are going to commence with chapter 51. Okay? Once again, as last time, I have in front of me the Hebrew translation direct from the Arabic of Michal Schwartz, and it is this text that I'm going to refer to. I'm going to, any innuendo or subtleties in the text are going to come purely and solely out of the Hebrew translation, which I understand to be, from a reader's point of view, the most user-friendly translation that exists in the Rambam, including the Penis edition. So in other words, I'll read the Hebrew, translate to English, and then we'll discuss the issues. So, we begin on Perek Nun Aleph in the Chelek Aleph, the first volume of the Rambam in the Schwartz edition. This corresponds to page 115. Perek Nun Aleph. Says the Rambam, Yesh b'metzias tevorem rabim berurim umuchuvarim. In reality, there are things which are very clear. Mehem uskolim rishonim. There are things that are known definitively. In other words, they're known with certainty. Umuchashoy, things which are, I guess, sensed with certainty. Umehem kovim le'edin, are things that are almost certain. In other words, the Rambam says there are certain things that people know that with absolute certainty. In other words, if in fact I left the person alone, which means I didn't badger him in any theological way, he would never have to bring proof to them. In other words, I don't have to be proof that, you know, I'm sitting at a tan desk and that I'm wearing a white shirt at a great tie and that I'm speaking in front of this camera. For example, motion. I mean, something moves. I mean, there's no reason that I have to prove that he's moving. Or, for example, a person's, you know, actions on the part of a person. Things that are destroyed or that are emerge that we can, you know, that we can see clearly. And of course, we don't have to bring proofs to things which are known with certainty, like the characteristics of certain matters or certain materials or certain things. Like the fire is hot. You know, you don't have to prove me that the fire is hot. You don't have to prove me that the water is cold. Certainly, in the third mikveh in the Mereshef, the water is extremely cold, or the mikveh of the Ari. Right? No one's going to convince me that the water in the mikveh of the Ari is warm. It's cold. I don't care how much you're spiritually on fire. That water is cold. Okay. Ulam. So the Rambam says, why do we need proofs? Why do we have to even back up and try to look for proofs of things which are known empirically with absolute certainty? Says the Rambam. Ulam, nonetheless. Mikavan she satsu deus buzore. Since weird, strange ideas have emerged, imitzad mishetar, perhaps the person is making a mistake, he's hallucinating. Imitzad mishis kam lechach b'shal inyan kol shu v'chel, or a person has an agenda. V'cholak b'chach al teva metzius, he decides to challenge reality as we know it. V'hichli dava mukhash, he wants to deny things that people know with certainty, or people perceive with certainty. Oratzal o'ira dimyan shav, he wants to create an illusion. Shenimtza masha eno nimtza. He wants to assert that something exists which doesn't exist. I mean, people are doing things like this, says the Rambam. So because of that, we see the Chachamim have to, the wise people have to bring proofs that these things exist. They have to somehow deconstruct or dispute, right, these unintelligible consequences of the imaginations of people who are either mistaken or have different types of theological agendas. כפי שאנו רואים שאריסטו מביא ראיות לקיום התנוע מכיוון שהוכשה מוכיח בחוק המופסיס אז אי קיום האטום. In other words, Aristotle had to prove that motion exists, I guess because I've seen those paradoxes, or perhaps the existence of an atom. In other words, once paradoxes are raised, I mean, Zeno says you can never get anywhere. Well, that's absolutely ridiculous. Of course people get somewhere. So Aristotle, in fact, actually had to bring proofs that actually motion exists. I think, though, with respect to Zeno and Aristotle, the final, what's called Machiavelli Apotheos, was actually with the invention of the calculus. I think, really, that really nailed the, you know, put the nail in the coffin on Zeno's paradox. It's amazing that Yeshiva Bochum still have a pshat in Zeno's paradox. You don't agree with me? Okay, anyway, but Aristotle refuted according to the Rambam too. Okay, fine. Okay, now. Kagoyin Zeh. Okay, says the Rambam. Now that we've made this introduction, so let's go on to theology. Kagoyin Zeh, right? Similarly, Shlilas Toyar Atmos Ben El Yisala. Similarly, in the case of denying the attributes of God. I mean, the Rambam's going to say, it's obvious. God has no attributes. I don't have to speak about this. Except there are certain theologically demented people who claim that God has attributes. So for this reason, I'm going to have to enter into a discussion in which I'm going to refute the claims that God has attributes as we know them. Says the Rambam, right? It's obvious. It's something that's known certainty. It's the ABC of logic, of thinking. What is this? Actually, no. Actually, that we're going to make an argument here. In other words, we know with absolute certainty, immediately, we know that an attribute is separate from the actual object itself. Though the attribute of an object is something which is separate from the object that's being described. But it happens to be like a state of the object. But an object can be in different states. And because of that, it's called a mikra, which usually translates as an accidental property. In other words, an object can be in several states. Since an object can only be what it is, so therefore it must be that the state of the object, which corresponds to an attribute of the object, cannot be at one with the object's essence. Otherwise, the object would have several essences. Essences. Okay, now, let's go to page 116. Right? Now, if in fact the attribute is the same as the essence of the object, atzmus I'm going to call the essence. The din zach, the zach in itself, the thing in itself. The essence of the object, what the object is. In other words, if an attribute was at one with the essence of the object, so therefore, it would just be a, he says, chazorah b'dibur b'lvad, we just return in speech, I mean, it would be really sort of like a syllogism. In other words, it would be something which is just a definition or a syllogism. We'll see what it means. Ki'ilu amat, like you said, for example, says the Rambam, there's two ways of saying this, of saying that b'dibur is chayza, the speech comes back, which means it's reflexive, which means it's just describing the object, and therefore the object is identical with itself and with its description, right? Identity. Kilo amat, as if you said, ha'adam o'adim, say a man is a man. P is P. Oh, hezbe shol shem, or it's, for example, a hezbe means a definition of a name. Kilo amat, like you said, ha'adam hu ha'chai ha'medabit. A person is a living animal that talks. That smacks of Darwin. We'll say that living thing which talks. Says the Rambam, the essence of who man is he's a living thing which talks. In other words, there's not a third factor that goes into describing a man. Zulas chai, a man is certainly something which lives. Vahi alto nefesh chaya, umedaber, vahi pach ba'afav, nefesh chayim. In other words, man is a living creature, and he also speaks, right? Shuwata, that's man. As the Rambam understands, that's actually a definition, a strict definition of man. Shuamatua b'chayim v'dibur. Because man is described, actually, according to the Rambam, exactly, necessarily and sufficiently, with chayim, being a living creature, uvidibor, and with speech. But once again, this is only a definition. It doesn't add something outside the person. It's as if a person says, the thing which I call a person, that's the thing which is constituted of two things, namely, mikhayim, being a living creature, umidibor, and having the ability to speak. So the Rambam says it's an identity. In other words, an attribute which is at one with the essence of an object is an identity. Either it's an absolute syllogism or a definition. That's the Shita Rambam. Okay, now, let's go on further. So this is the Muskal Rishon. Muskal Rishon, the Rambam refers to it, is that an attribute is something separate from the essence, unless it's an absolute syllogism or a definition. Okay? Let's go further. The second paragraph on page 116. We're going to explain, dear audience, what all this means, but let's just proceed in the Rambam, as I say many times in the yeshiva. We'll read and translate, and after that we will fill in the hermeneutical space. Mikan bar, from here it's clear, ki toya yochol liyos rak bishlei devorim. Once again, the Rambam goes back and says, a toya, an attribute, can be one of two things. Either it's the essence of that which is being described, in which case it's actually a definition. Now, says the Rambam, it could also be that we can also define God. In other words, when we use an attribute to denote the essence of an object, that object be God too. We're not denying this respect to God. In other words, logically, it could possibly be that I can actually define God. I mean, I ain the ontological proof. Ella bepchinacheres, but kivish is bava. It might be that we might reject it for some other reasons. But in other words, it's true that God is nothing, is no different than anything else. I could, say either God is God or God is the most perfect being, right? We will get in Mirat Hashem to the ontological proof at one point in these lectures. How can we avoid it? O shatayah eno matur. Either that, says the Rambam, or the attribute is not identical with the object that's being described. It's something which is in addition to the object. It's nice if they add it to, but it's not identical with the object itself. So therefore, if it's added to the object, the Torah is, the attribute is mikra, is accidental. Because since it's not the same as the essence, the object might have this attribute at some time, but not have this attribute at some time. That's called an accident. That means it's coincidental. Now, says the Rambam, right, for this reason, it follows us that we deny or reject the possibility of an accident, right, from an attribute of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, we can define God, what God's essence is, but we can't ascribe to God an attribute which is accidental. Because it's not at one, right? Because anything which is added to the essence of something, right, does not add to its truth. Does not, in other words, it's connected with that is truth. And this is called mikra. Noisiv lachach. This is, says the Rambam. Ilu. In other words, so what's the Rambam saying? Uvakach sheshoyim is Hashem mikra mitei abayim. For this reason, right, we deny that anything which is mikra accidental can be, right, a attribute of the Boire, right? Ein mashmos nishlala sheken kolin yanois amazon dovek bov eino mashmashim misasavik. It doesn't add to the truth, right? It doesn't add to what it is. V'zoisi mashmos shomikra. Okay, now. So in other words, the attribute is not the same thing as God. It's something different. Noisim lakach, said the Rambam, ilo haya term rabim, if in fact they were attributes, it could be, there would be things that are co-eternal with God, too. However, there would not be any notion of God's unity, if right? Except if we believe that God is one thing, she'ein bo murkavos, he's not composed of different things, v'lo ribuy shel inyanim, and God does not involve any multiplicity. In other words, since God, by definition, is one, so it can't be that he's in two different states. In other words, either his essence, right? If you define his essence, that's one thing. His essence always is what it is, and you know what, doesn't subdivide. But if you make an attribute of God, what you're saying is sometimes he has attribute, sometimes he doesn't have attribute, which means there's God with attribute, God without attribute. God is a function of an attribute, f of x, f of y. And therefore there's two gods, not one God, and this basically subverts the notion of God's unity. That's the Rambam says. Right? And so the Rambam says, now, how do we know God is one? Says the Rambam, right? As I'll explain this later on in the Sefer, where does he explain this? He proves this in the first chapter of the second section of our Nevuchim. Therefore, after 26 preliminary presumptions, Gematria Yud Kei Vav Kei, including the eternity of the world, the Rambam proves God not only exists, but is one, absolutely one, cannot be subdivided. And so given that fact, that right, God cannot have an attribute. That's the Rambam's argument right now. And that says the Rambam is a Muskel Rishon. Okay? Okay, very good. So now, up to now, the Rambam says is a Dava Pashut, a simple thing, that in fact, we can define God. Perhaps. We can define God or identify Him by a tautology or something which is a definition or His essence. But to ascribe an attribute to him, since the attribute is separate from him, we'd have to somehow photocopy him or multiply him in a way which violates his unity, which can be philosophically proven. That's the Rambam's position. Okay, now, so far, so good. It doesn't seem that there are any what you would call chidushim, novela, in the section. But now we're going to come to the very important thing. It's very interesting, though, before we commence, is that the Rambam actually is, you know, going into a little bit like philosophy of language here. In other words, the Rambam's approach here is not directly speaking about God's attributes, but speaking about generally what are, you know, how do we describe, how are adjectives used in language? That's what the Rambam is speaking about. And the Rambam is developing an entire linguistic theory, which we'll actually see is going to actually developed a very sophisticated tool in a little while. Okay. Now, comes the Rambam, and we're on page 117 in the Schwartz edition, and the Rambam says the following thing. Anashim mikerav oiskim bi'iyun, people who are engaged in iyun, I guess in philosophy, in thought, and reflection, he gil de kach, reached the point, they decide to say that God's attributes are not his essence, but are not things separate from his essence. Very interesting. That doesn't fit into the philosophy of language that the Rambam stated. The Rambam says, either a definition is at one with the essence of an object, or it's separate as of an object. It says that there are certain people who have violated this muskal rishon. The Rambam says, whoever understands language understands that an adjective or a proposition, right? Right? X is P. Either P is a definition of X, or it's something other than X. It's not identical with X. But says the Rambam, there are some people who have created types of attributes which are, says the Rambam, not identical with the essence, but not separate from his essence. A no man's land, a no attribute land description of an object. Okay? Now, who's the Rambam referring to? So, in the footnotes, Professor Schwartz, speaks about the our philosophy, Alba Kadlani, who died in the beginning of the 11th century, etc., etc., from the Ashiraya, Shara. We'll speak about these a little bit later. It's not important right now. This is what people call the modes. So some say that God has what's called modes. There is essence and not his essence. In other words, by saying this, they're speaking about general, you know, universals, namely, in other words, it's like a universal. What's a universal? A set of things. Like, does it exist or doesn't exist? You can say both of these things. In other words, on one hand, it doesn't exist. Like a universal. The set of all people. So what is it? On one hand, it's not an object. The set of all people. It's a universal. It's an abstract. On the other hand, I can't say it doesn't exist. It's a set of all people. It's like people say about the atom. The etzem ha-boid is the atom, which basically, on one hand, it's not in any place. On the other hand, right, it takes up space. Or some people say a person there's no action attributed to a person. But on the other hand, though, he can acquire things. In other words, basically, muddled concepts, contradictions in and of themselves. Says the Rambam, Eile kulam diburam asher rak ne'amarim. These are things which are just, I should call it hot air. These are things which are just spoken. Heinemtsayim bebiftas fasayim. You can say these things by moving your lips. V'loy bedas. But they don't, do not correspond to anything which has any, you know, has any logical existence. Because the das. In other words, I mean, certainly we cannot conceive them, and they're certainly not in the real world. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that certain people have created objects which do not exist in any intellectual space. In other words, they're objects which have no rational construction, and neither do they have existence in the physical world. Right? Ulam. Okay, that's what the Rambam says.
What's wrong with that?
They don't exist. It's an absurdity. They say things which make no sense. I can't point to any object in the world which corresponds to them, and I can't point to any proposition which makes any sense, has any meaning, which corresponds to them too. To say an object is here and not here, to say something is essence, part of the essence, not part of the essence, and not separate from the essence, these are basically all different types of contradictions, paradoxes, which have no existence. It's nonsense. It's garble. It's biftas fasayim. It's garble. We say these things. We have no rational understanding of them, and we cannot point to them right within the physical world. That's kutla das badas. In other words, they make no sense, and they don't exist. Ulam kefisha deya ata, says the Rambam. Right? In other words, what the Rambam is trying to say is that, I mean, obviously, who is he attacking? He's attacking people who want to attribute to God attributes. And on one hand, they want to say the attributes are not separate from God, but they're not his essence either. In other words, fuddled concepts. In fact, actually, we discussed actually last week, the Trinity was regarded by Descartes, even Descartes, as being a mystery. It's a muddled concept. It's not clear. It's three and one and one and three. The Rambam is basically saying that all theories of attributes of God of this sort are of the same type. In other words, they're metaphysical fantasies, which we'll see in a little while, which have no reality, neither in rational reality nor in empirical reality. That's the Rambam's claim. Okay? I think that's safely the Rambam's claim. Now, ulam. Nonetheless, says the Rambam, kefi sheyedeya ata, as you know, whoever doesn't fool himself also knows this too. In other words, people who fool themselves, right, can be convinced of anything. These things are somehow, there's a whole system which protects these things. through hakbaras milim umishalim musulafim, all different types of funny metaphors and things and words, which somehow can fool a person, give him the thought, then perhaps that these things exist. Umumotos ayidei tzvichim v'ginuyim umidim rabim umurkovim shel dialectica v'sophistica. Basically, it's sophistry. In other words, people pay language games and mind games on this. You know, sometimes there are drushes like that. You know, they say all types of things. Wow, that's incredible. You know, even the person is saying absolutely logical, nonsense. In other words, says the Rambam, there's all different types of ways that the mind can be fooled into believing that things exist, right, by virtue of the power of language and presence. But says the Rambam, don't fool yourself. In other words, if a person really examines these things, if you're a critical thinker, you'll find the confusion. You want to create something that doesn't exist. You want to create something between two things which contradict each other, and you can't do so. Is there something between existing and not existing, being and non-being? There's nothing that exists that doesn't exist. People have created all different types of crazy theories of modes and attributes of God that are part of God, not part of God. Things that are part of Him, not part of Him. They're part of Him, and what's part of Him, not part of Him. Some people think God has attributes. You say, is it part of Him? No. Is it not part of Him? No. People have reached this terrible level. In other words, they say, he's not physical. Yeah, they know he has attributes. As kol zoyz chayeves alicha b'ikvus pshitei sifri yizgalus fi azbi b'prokim shivol al oidois in yadamein. Okay, the Rambam is going to continue speaking about this thing. Okay, now, what is the Rambam doing? What the Rambam is doing is he's claiming the following thing. What I want to do is, first of all, there's a clear connection between chapter 51 and chapter 50. In chapter 50, the Rambam began, this was the first lecture, the Rambam began and said that faith, what he called emunah, has to be a something that a person understands is certain. Either rational certainty or empirical certainty. That's what faith, that's called faith. So the Rambam says is that faith is not blind faith. But, in other words, but rather faith can only come as a result that a person convinces himself critically that something either exists from a rational point of view or from an empirical point of view. That's what faith is. Badas or chutz badas. Says the Rambam, but there are certain people who feel that they can create illusions, usually by what he calls dialectics and sophistry, that basically violate all the laws of logic, but somehow by by linguistic bullying, right? They can convince people of things which neither exist logically, nor do they exist correspond to any reality. Now, what's interesting is that Harry Austin Wolfson of Harvard, formerly a Voloshin, in an article, the name of the article is what is the name of the article? Yeah, 1 second. It's not a negative attribute. Okay, it's an article in the Rambam's attributes. Makes the following statement. Says Wolfson, what Maimonides therefore means to say is that belief is that which can be expressed by a logical proposition. But what the Rambam's saying is that the Rambam's developing a theory of language, of an attribute. A belief has to fall into the categories of what's called logical propositions. Either it's an identity, or either it corresponds, right? Or either it corresponds to a fact, okay? Something other than the essence of the object. Since this is what is meant by a belief, then every statement made about God which to express any of our beliefs about his nature, with a capital H, must of necessity constitute a logical proposition, the truth of which to be tested by its corresponding reality, the nature of God. In other words, when we make statements about God, we can't violate the logic, right, of propositions. Meaning that, in other words, the truth of a proposition has, in fact, has to be tested. Now, he says it's corresponding to reality, the nature of God. But I disagree, Professor Wolfson. That's not true. What the Rambam is really saying is that statements about God, right, have to correspond to, you know, the truth value of propositions in general. In other words, either something is a syllogism or a definition, or something is a proper attribute, which is something other than the essence of an object. Right? And in other words, either it's a definition which describes what an object is, or it's an attribute of something which is clearly something other than the object. In other words, which means that it's an accidental property, which might or might not be true about the object, but it's really something other than the essence of the object itself. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that we shouldn't delude ourselves that when we speak about God and we get into metaphysics, then we can already violate the rules of language, the truth values of language. In other words, we have to treat God like we treat any being, any object. Either we make a tautology, or we define him, or we describe him by an attribute. Of course, the Rambam says you can't describe God by an attribute, but only on the basis of the fact that, in other words, God is incorporeal. In other words, we cannot describe God by an attribute which is at once an essence of who God is. In other words, if we describe God by an attribute, then obviously the statement is false. By definition of who God is, God is, you know, one, which has been proven philosophically. So therefore, the only way we can define God is either through tautology or through a definition of God. In other words, so what the Rambam is saying is that the logical truth value of a proposition includes statements that are made by God. People who are making statements by God and violating the truth value of propositions are basically making statements of nonsense. That's what the Rambam is saying. Now, what I want to do is, I want to take the Rambam a little bit in perspective. Okay? And taking perspective, what I want to do is, I want to read from, I could have read from many things, but I'm going to read from Rebecca Goldstein's book on incompleteness, The Proof and Paradox of Kurt Gödel, in which actually, beginning on page 77, she actually has a discussion of what's called logical positivism. Okay? And we're going to speak about this. This is page 77. This book was given to me before I went to Russia, and I read it in Russia. And I remember that it's a very, very nice book, very clearly written. And it's a good summary of things, okay? Okay, it's published by Atlas Books. And what's the, what? Right, it's called Incompleteness, The Proof and Paradox of Kurt Gödel. Copyright 2005 by Rebecca Goldstein, etc. Okay? Now, says Rebecca Goldstein, logical positivism, this is page 77. Logical positivism, that was a movement in Vienna, most of whom were Jewish, by the way. I think the majority she counts as being Jewish. Of course, right? In the tradition of the Rambam. We're going to see that the Rambam is actually offering to us actually a version of this concept here. Logical positivism is sometimes referred to as logical empiricism or radical empiricism. Traditional empiricism, exemplified by the views of the Scottish philosopher David Hume, who lived from 1711 to 1776, had sought to delineate the limits of knowledge. There were, on the other hand, on the one hand, the sort of questions that could be answered through a priori reasoning. These, according to Rome, had no ontological import. They were merely conceptual truths that do not tell us anything about the way the world really is. They merely reflect abstract relationships between concepts. Hume called them relations of ideas. So the truth that bachelors are unmarried is analogous to the truth that ghosts are the disembodied spirits of the dead, and to the truth that fat-free ice cream has no fat. I guess in the Rambam that would correspond to Adam who Adam, man is a man. Each is true regardless of whether its subject, bachelors or ghosts, or fat-free ice cream actually exists. Actually, in fact, that you could say that man is the talking creature could also be true too. I mean, it could possibly be that, you know, we can wipe out the world, you know, chas v'shalom from all human beings, but it would be true that man is a creature who talks, or nasa adam b'tzalmeinu k'museinu, God thought to make man before it was actually a man. So what is the definition of man? God made a creature who talks. So in other words, we could consider actually the first two, the Rambams, in other words, first two categories, meaning either a syllogism or a definition, as part of what Hume calls relations of ideas, you know, more or less. On the other hand, there are propositions that reach out beyond the merely conceptual purport to describe the nature of the world, to say what things exist and what are the properties of the relations between things. According to traditional empiricism, any propositions that bear on the nature of the world, Hume called them matters of fact and existence, can only be shown to be true or false through the use of empirical means, and this, I think, would call to attributes which are accidents. In other words, the man is walking. I mean, the same man is walking, we have to actually look and make sure he's walking. Now, of course, you can assume that movement's maybe a, you know, an illusion. But says the Rambam, if movement is not an illusion, so you can check it out by looking at reality. Some evidence or others of the essence. The faculty of a priori reason can tell us how our concepts are related to one another, but cannot tell us what the world beyond our concepts is like. For that sort of knowledge requires some sort of experiential contact with the world. So more or less, in other words, this fits into the two categories of the Rambam, right? Either, like the Rambam says, something is chalazara b'diba b'lvat, you know, it's a tautology in a certain sense, or definition. That's a priori concepts, relations of ideas. Or some things are matters of facts of existence. You know, they're attributes. An attribute of something that's not the essence of an object. So therefore, the statement that the object is X, right? You'd have to check it on a reality. That's more or less what the Rambam is saying. To use a favorite example, says the Rambam, says Rebecca Goldstein, Rivka Goldstein, consider the question of the existence of God. I'm bringing this for a reason, right? Defined as a transcendent being who stands outside space and time, severely limiting the possibilities for experiential contact, right? I mean, you know, it's at least such experiences would have to occur in time. Many traditional empiricists had declared the existence of such a transcendental God inviolably unknowable, since the common means at our disposal are in principle inadequate for answering the question one way or the other. In other words, does God exist? Well, you have to check it out. You have to understand if God exists. I mean, you can't check it out. It's beyond us. Of course, there's always the ontological proof, but we're not speaking about that right now. This is before the ontological proof. Maybe, maybe not. So remote a God beyond our experience may exist, but we'll never know, because we can't check it out. The logical period, okay, now, so in other words, basically, what Hume is saying, but Lemaisa, in other words, the fact is, they'll say that God can't be checked out in the world, and actually the God would probably agree with that, to a certain extent. I mean, they didn't believe in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam did. The Rambam felt that Kadosh Baruch Hu's existence can be proven logically. But in other words, I think that the Rambam, the Havdil, is taking actually the same position as you. Meaning, a statement has to have either a rational truth value or an empirical truth value, says the Rambam. In other words, when it comes to, like, to metaphysics, to God, we can't make statements about God that do not correspond to any, you know, rational or empirical reality. Okay, now, let's go further. Now, this is empiricism in the classical sense. Now, what about logical positivism? The reason I'm bringing this is because I want to actually get to Wittgenstein, okay? Because I think there's a very interesting parallel between Wittgenstein and the Rambam, Lahavdil Elef Havdolis. Now, let's go further. Page 78, second paragraph. The logical positivist turned the empiricist theory of knowledge into a theory of meaning. That's what I want, a theory of meaning. In other words, according to the latter, The empirical means there will be relevant discovering whether a particular proposition is true, also by the very meaning of the proposition. The positive theory of meaning is therefore often called the verificationist criterion for meaningfulness, and it legislates that the borders of empirical knowability map the borders of meaningfulness. If one cannot, in principle, imagine any positive circumstances that would count as corroboration for the proposition, then what one has is the mere semblance of a proposition, hollowed out at a meaning, what the positive dubbed a pseudo-proposition. In other words, the positive said a statement means only that which the statement says about reality that can be checked out by reality. If a statement doesn't correspond to reality, that has no meaning. Now, if you think about it, that's what the Rambam is saying too. The Rambam is saying people are making statements about God like they're making statements about nature. People make statements about God, which amount to the same thing as making statements about the existence of atoms. Now, atoms obviously don't exist. They're worse than flying pink elephants. So a statement about God, which is meaningless, is like a statement about nature, which is meaningless. In other words, the Rambam is actually taking this, you know, this, what he calls this, what does he call this? This theory of meaning that verificationist criterion for meaningless, the Rambam is actually, in a certain sense, applying this here too. Now, goes on, Rivka, yeah.
Does God exist a meaningful statement?
Well, we'll say. The Rambam would say God exists only because I can prove it rationally. But in other words, but at this point right now, all we're saying is, the Rambam is saying is God is not an exception to this. In other words, God has to adhere to the meaning theory of propositions. That's what the Rambam is saying. Now, he goes on and says like this. By declaring the limits of knowability one and the same with the limits of meaningfulness, the positive took the problem, but aspect of such a question, as existence of God. Or moral values or abstract entities up a notch. So that now the answerability of certain questions no longer takes the measure of our kind of inadequacies, but rather signals that the question ought never have been posed at all. In other words, what they're saying is that if I cannot verify something, it's a meaningless statement. Unknowability is regarded as a sign that a mistaken use of language has been made. If God is so defined that no meaningfulness can really be relevant to the question of existence, then that question is exposed as meaningless. Right? Right? The putative answer, yes, God exists, or no, he does not, are both propositional passiers. Anything that can legitimately be said can be said clearly. The condition for us being one and the same condition of verifiability. Now, the Rambam is saying something very similar to this, of course. He has a whole different... In other words, they're assuming that, you know, I can't identify them with God, and of course they're assuming that you can't prove that there's a God. But in other words, the Rambam is saying is, you know, it's given the fact that I prove that there's a God, but certainly it's a logical statement that can be proven, right? In other words, what they're saying is that statements which do not clearly fall into any they cannot be verified, either empirically, actually rationally too, as possible, as we'll see in a little while, right, are not true. They're almost saying the same thing. In other words, theology cannot misuse the logical structure of a syntax and claim that somehow metaphysics doesn't fall into logical linguistic categories. And they're almost saying the same thing. In other words, a confused syntax is a false concept. So, the Rambam, in my opinion, is espousing here a medieval version of logical positivism. In the sense that there's a logical structure to syntax, and metaphysical statements, including those of God, have to fall into these categories too. Okay? Now, it's very, very interesting that really, in fact, the bottom line comes out is that when they say that God cannot be verified in reality, empirically, it doesn't exist, the Rambam is saying the same thing too by saying that God cannot have any attributes. In other words, God cannot have any attributes means that I can't look to something outside of God and connect it with God by virtue of the definition or the proof of God's unity. Okay? Now, I want to go a little further, because what I think is, you know, everything worse than Gilgulim. The Rambam is presenting to us a logical positivistic theory of God in an attempt to implode what he clearly sees to be nonsensical statements by metaphysicians who describe God with propositions which clearly do not fall into logical categories, and therefore said the Rambam, are nonsense. Okay? Now, I want to go a little bit further. Okay? Beginning on page 90, she speaks about Wittgenstein. Wittgenstein, as you all know, was Jewish. I don't know how Jewish, but he was Jewish. Okay? Wittgenstein, of course, held that there are two types of statements. Either statements which are actually, he actually called them tautologies. There were statements that could be proven. Mathematics were examples of tautologies. Or statements that correspond to events in the world. And these are the only type of statements that one can make. In other words, for a person to make statements other than that which corresponds to things in the world or tautologies, every other statement is nonsense. And consequently, according to Wittgenstein, a lot of what philosophy speaks about, or theology speaks about, metaphysics, is total nonsense because it's a misuse of language. This is in Wittgenstein's first work, The Tractatus. Now, it's interesting that I want to go into certain statements from Wittgenstein which he quotes, which I think in a certain sense I want to read these statements. Says Wittgenstein, this is on page 97, is from the Tractatus, proposition 4.003. He says, most of the propositions and questions to be found in philosophy are not false but nonsensical. Consequently, we cannot give any answer to questions of this kind, but we can only point out that they are nonsensical. Most of the propositions and questions of philosophers arise from our failure to understand the logic of our language. And it is not surprising that the deepest problems are in fact not problems at all. It's a problem with the Trinity. It's not a problem. It's a misuse of language. You create problems by using language in a way which violates the rules of the truth-value propositions. The Rambam is saying the same thing. I don't want to say that Wittgenstein is a Gilgul of the Rambam, but the Rambam is saying the following same thing. Now, I want to go further. Wittgenstein ends the Tractatus with an incredible statement. It's proposition 6.54. By the way, there's a very interesting discussion with Wittgenstein. This guy must have had a tremendous presence. Like he psyched everybody out, including Russell. He says, this is on page 103, proposition 6.54. My propositions serve as elucidations in the following way. Anyone who understands me eventually recognizes them as nonsensical when he has used them as steps to climb up beyond them. He must, so to speak, throw away the ladder after you climbed up it. Meaning that all the philosophy was basically to climb up a ladder, then you throw up the ladder, and you throw away the ladder. Now, there's a quotation that I think at the beginning of the Tractatus, right? That speaks about, of that which is not in the world, we must be silent. That's the end. That's the very, very end. Of that we must be silent. I want to claim that's the negative theology of the Rambam. Wittgenstein is the final theology of the Rambam. The Rambam basically is saying is that, in other words, if I take sentences and propositions and I use them in non-logical ways and I violate the rules of logic, I can create things which don't exist and then I can speak about metaphysical things. But if I use language properly, I'll come to realize I can't really speak about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I can't speak about God. He's beyond everything. He's beyond things. In other words, once I use propositions in a logical, meaningful manner, Only that can bring me to a true understanding of God, who is truly unspeakable. And in fact, that's actually where the Rambam is heading. In other words, if I misuse language, if I violate the truth propositions of statements, I can create all different types of illusions and delusions, right? And I can speak about God. But if I use language in its proper syntactical way, then in fact only then can I come to a true understanding, a true appreciation of the negativity of God's description. In other words, of negative theology. God is indescribable, cannot be given attributes precisely because I'm using language in a meaningful, logical way. That seems to be the Rambam's basic point here. So we see clearly that what the Rambam is doing is he's following, I don't want to call it radical empiricism, but logical, positivist agenda in understanding language as a jumping off point for his attack on theologies which somehow want to create divine attributes, and the Rambam's accusing them of violating the rules and logical syntax of language, and by virtue of that, creating conceptions of God which violate what the Rambam understands to be God's ultimate unity and incorporeality. Okay, now, this, in fact, actually lays the basis for an incredible philosophical understanding of the Rambam. We see clearly that the Rambam was not only a medievalist. The Rambam actually, in my opinion, is in fact invoking concepts which actually reach very, very strongly into what are called to be philosophical novel, chidushim, of the 20th century. Wolfson's statement that the Rambam understood the belief as a mythological proposition is actually more significant than I think Professor Wolfson understood it. In Mirz Hashem, the next lecture from this undisclosed place in Yerushalayim, it now is closed, right? We will continue on this concept and see how the Rambam develops not only his logical truth theory of syntax, but uses that to express a very powerful theory in which we can't make beautiful statements about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but regards to Kodesh Baruch Hu, that we will see in the next lecture. Until then, everybody, Hatzlacha, be well.